Barely a week seems to go by when we don't learn of yet another security problem affecting Microsoft Windows users. I have to say at this point that I do feel that the security in Windows has improved dramatically over the years, but obviously Windows being the most popular desktop operating system, it is going to be the one which people are going to be most likely to attack and create malicious code for. We've heard about the Blaster Worm and the Sasa Worm and all these problems sort of affecting our Windows, and there isn't a solution that overnight is going to address all these problems. Although there are a number of things we as users can do. We have talked on this program previously about making sure your computer's software is up to date, running the Windows Update utility, which can be found from the Start menu in some releases of Windows and from the Tools menu in Internet Explorer 5 or 6. And if you regularly run Windows Update, then you will be preventing many of the most common problems from affecting you. Prevention always being better than the cure. The other steps we've recommended on Main Menu in the past are to install a virus checker and keep the virus checker up to date. The developers of the virus checkers usually maintain a database of virus signatures, and your virus software uses these signatures to detect malicious code on your system. So it's very important that if you're running a virus checker, you keep it up to date. A virus checker that's more than a few months out of date is probably about as much use as not running a virus checker at all, although I should qualify that by saying any virus checker is probably better than no virus checker. The other step we've encouraged people to take is to run a firewall. A firewall is a piece of software which monitors the traffic between your machine and the internet and should block any unwanted or malicious attacks from the outside world. So they're the three things, really, the three rules of thumb. Run Windows Update on a regular basis, install and maintain a virus checker, and use a firewall. And if you do all of the above, then you should be fairly well looked after. The fourth thing, and maybe this should have been the first, but certainly probably the most important thing, is to remain vigilant. You wouldn't cross the road without paying attention to what was coming in each direction. And in the same way, you shouldn't open an unexpected email attachment. If you receive an email that appears in any way suspicious, even if it appears to be from somebody you know, don't take any chances. If it's a important attachment, then the sender really should let you know ahead of time that they're going to send you that. And we've talked on Main Menu in the past as well about other ways of transferring files other than using email. So there are a few things to bear in mind. It's not a comprehensive list by no means, but it should keep you safe. So it comes as no surprise, really, that the emphasis in Windows XP Service Pack 2, to be released later this summer, is really on security. With the launch of Windows Server 2003, Microsoft started a Trustworthy Computing initiative, and this was really to convince users that they are now taking security very seriously and that future versions and updates to Windows will have security at the top of the priority list. So, what of Windows XP Service Pack 2, and why are we looking at it now when it hasn't been released yet? Well, it has been released as a what Microsoft are calling a release candidate. So this is a pre-release version, a bit like a beta version, I suppose you could call it. Although most of the problems should be ironed out by the release candidate stage. And a couple of months ago in March, Microsoft put out the RC1 version, that's the release candidate 1 of the Windows XP Service Pack 2. Now this release candidate is just that, it's a release candidate, it's not the final version. It could be prone to problems, this is still a testing phase, so there may still be problems to be ironed out, and also the functionality may not be exactly the same as that which appears in the final Windows XP Service Pack 2 release, although I would say that there's probably a fairly good chance that most of what you're about to hear will be the same. I should also say at this stage, if you are considering installing the release candidate of Windows XP Service Pack 2, then really this isn't for the faint of heart, and you shouldn't install this on a machine which you rely on for day-to-day use. This is a release candidate. This is software which has been released at the moment in a testing phase, and it's really not intended for mass consumption. But if you have a spare machine and you can be confident that you're not going to lose any data, then by all means go ahead and give it a go. So to get the download of the service pack, when the service pack is released, it will be available probably through the Windows Update portal. When you access Windows Update, you'll be told that there is a service pack available and you'll be given the opportunity to download it. However, to download the release candidate, one needs to visit allthews.microsoft.com/technet, that's T-E-C-H-N-E-T, and click on Downloads, and then there is a link to get the Windows XP Service Pack 2 release candidate. The download itself is actually quite substantial. 273 megabytes is the size of the single executable containing the release candidate of Windows XP Service Pack 2. And so if you are on dial-up, this is going to take you quite a while. For the most part, the Windows XP Service Pack 2 install is fairly standard. You're given the usual warnings about backing up your data and making sure that you've closed all other running applications. Users have, of course, been ignoring these warnings for years. It's very difficult to change behaviour, but it really is worth taking heed, as the installation of an operating system service pack makes a lot of radical changes, and there are quite a lot of things that can go wrong. You are given the option to create a Windows XP restore point, which will archive your existing system files, so you are then able to roll back to your previous XP install if you decide you don't get along with the new service pack. And if you do decide that you don't want to keep Windows XP Service Pack 2 on your system, it can be removed fairly painlessly from the Add Remove Programs extension of the Windows Control Panel. The $64,000 question has to be, is the new service pack accessible to people using screen reading and magnification software? Well, the good news is that for the most part, yes, it is accessible. However, there are one or two issues which have yet to be resolved. There do appear to be some minor cohabitation issues when running several access products, in that the DCM order can sometimes become confused. However, we must be aware that this is a release candidate, and the only one of the leading screen readers to formally be announcing support for Service Pack 2 is in fact Windowize from GW Micro. However, I have it on good authority that JAWS works with Service Pack 2 of Windows XP, or at least the release candidate of Service Pack 2 of Windows XP, and the Dolphin software, Luna, HAL and Supernova, also work with Service Pack 2. The only other area where I was able to identify a potential accessibility problem is at the conclusion of the installation. Once your system files have been updated, the installer asks you to reboot, and upon rebooting, before you get to the login screen and before you get to the desktop, the system stops and the user is presented with a screen which poses a number of security questions, and we'll get to those in a moment. However, I wasn't able to access this screen using any access technology. I tried with Narrator, had no joy there, tried with Windowize, tried with Supernova and JAWS, and didn't have any luck. Now, it could of course be user error on my part, however, I wasn't able to get this screen to talk for love nor money. This screen appears very early on in the boot process after the service pack has been installed. And basically, the prompt is asking the user to enable automatic updates for Windows. So Microsoft really now trying to encourage people to have their machines automatically connect to the Windows Update website and search for new updates and patches and fixes and so on, and Microsoft wanting us to do this automatically now. And they're that serious about this that they're even willing to essentially freeze the system upon boot up, first time at least, to ask you to enable this. Now, with a bit of luck, I was able to get past this screen with a bit of spacing and tabbing and entering around the place, but it is a bit hit and miss, and I would recommend that you try and get some sighted assistance if there is any available. But potentially, to my mind at least, this prompt does pose quite a significant accessibility problem, in that you are not guaranteed to be able to run the installer entirely independently, which I think is a bit of a flaw. If you're able to replicate this problem, i.e. if you too have difficulty in getting your access software to read this prompt screen, which appears after the first reboot during the installation of Service Pack 2 for Windows XP, then I would strongly urge you to contact your screen reader vendor and also send your feedback to Microsoft. It's imperative in my mind that if there is a problem here, then it needs to be nipped in the bud before this service pack is released. So to deal with the issue of automatic updates, one can do this from the system properties, and we'll go and do that now. So let's go to the desktop.
Desktop. My media 2 of 19 list.
Okay, and let's go to my computer and bring up the properties for my computer with Alt and Enter.
General. 1 of 7 tab control property sheet dialog.
Okay, so we're on a tab control now. You can also get to this from the control panel by going to system. So we're just going to go along the top here.
Computer name.
Using the right cursor.
Hardware 3. Advanced. System restore. Automatic updates.
There we are. Automatic updates. And if I tab here.
Tell me why I should use automatic updates and how it works. Link.
There's a link there, obviously, with some help information behind it. We do see a lot more of this in Service Pack 2. Let's tab once again.
Automatic recommended radio button unchecked 1 to 4.
Okay, we're now on a radio button, and as you can hear, there are four options. So the first of which is automatic. So let's go through these.
Download updates for me, but let me choose when to install them. Radio button checked 2 to 4.
Okay, so you can hear the first one was, well, the first one was...
Automatic recommended. Radio button checked 1 to 4.
Automatic recommended, and that's probably the default in Service Pack 2, and that will automatically download and update to your system. There are pros and cons with that. The pros being that you don't need to worry about running Windows Update on a regular basis, although the disadvantage is that, of course, your bandwidth is being used without your knowledge. Windows is doing things in the background, and if you're like me, I like to use the technology. I don't want the technology to be using me, so I like to decide when these things are going to happen to my system, and I like to be selective about which updates I take. The second option there was...
Download updates for me, but let me choose when to install them. Radio button check 2 or 4.
Now that seems to be a happy medium. Download updates for me, but let me choose when I wish to install them. So the system again will be using your bandwidth in the background to go ahead and get these updates. But I should say that if you're taking updates on a regular basis, this isn't going to be a huge amount of bandwidth we're talking about here. But certainly if you're streaming audio and things of that nature, you need to be confident that you have as much of your bandwidth available to you as possible at any one time. So I like to do these things manually just to be sure. But there we are, that's the second option. The updates will be downloaded, and then when they're available to be installed, Windows will pop up and say, we've downloaded these updates for you, would you like to go ahead and install them now? At which point you can see what's available and choose yes or no.
Notify me, but don't automatically download or install them. Radio button check 3 or 4.
The third option is to be notified of updates when they become available. And finally, not to download them.
Turn off automatic updates. Radio button check 4 or 4.
And turn off automatic updates. And that's the fourth option. That's personally the one I go for. But that's where you determine how these updates are managed. So
OK button.
Let's go to OK. Now, if you do elect to take Windows Update manually, then you need to be sure that you are running it on a regular basis. And there are some changes here too. Just very briefly, I'll show you. So let's go back to the desktop.
Desktop.
And bring up the Start menu.
Start menu.
And go to Windows Update.
Windows Catalog. Windows Update W.
And then press Enter.
Start button. And Microsoft Internet Explorer. Custom control.
I'm just waiting for this page to...
Loading page. Download. Load done. 10 links, 2 frames, 1 table, 1 form.
Now that's not the end of it.
Loading page. Load done. 20 links, 6 frames, 2 tables, 2 forms. Loading. Loading page. Load done. 23 links, 6 frames, 2 tables, 2 forms.
So as you can hear there, there are 6 frames and 20 something links and a couple of forms. Now, obviously, you can move between the frames, and it doesn't really help us that the frames aren't labeled. For example,
Microsoft Windows Update iframe, untitled frame, Microsoft Windows Update frame, no frame.
And so,
top.
Let's go back to the top. So, you can hear there that things are a little bit busier on this page now. If I just go down,
Microsoft Windows Update frame, table 1, start 2 rows, 2 column, Microsoft.com, sitemap link, Windows link, edit box. Go button, home link, Windows family link, Windows catalog link, office family link, view installation history link, advanced settings link, administrator options link, help and support link, about Windows update link.
And so on, so there's plenty there to go at. So the option you would want, let's skip past the linked text.
Get the latest updates available for your computer's operating system, software, and hardware. Windows Update scans your computer to see what updates are required, and provides you with a list of updates tailored just for you. Start the Windows Update scan of your computer to determine which high priority updates you need. visited link.
Okay, that's the one, and obviously I've been there previously. So that's the one you would need if you just want to check for high priority updates. And then there are a couple of other options here.
Express install recommended high priority updates for your computer visited link.
That just looks for high priority updates only. It's the express update, if you will.
Start the Windows update scan of your computer to determine which critical and optional updates you need. Visited link.
And there you go, that's fairly self-explanatory. That will look for the critical and the optional updates. And as far as I know, ran this fairly recently, I'm bang up to date. So the Windows update page that you come to is quite a bit busier. And as I said, the frames don't appear to be labelled. So again, that's something to be nagging Microsoft about. In Windows XP Service Pack 2, there have been some changes to the Internet Connection Firewall. It's now called the Windows Firewall and can be found in a number of places. The most obvious of which is from the control panel, so let's go there now, back to the desktop.
Desktop.
And I'm going to go to my computer.
My computer. My Windows Explorer. No selected item. CDR control panel.
Control panel, there it is.
No selected item.
And let's go to the end.
Windows Firewall 32 of 32.
And there you go. You can hear there's 32 items now in my control panel, though I have added a couple of applications
Windows
of my own.
So, recommended O. Radio button. Checked. Property sheet.
Now, the important thing to note about the Windows Firewall, as it is now called, is that it is switched on by default. In the past, I believe, it was only switched on if you ran the network connection wizard, whereas now the Internet Firewall is on by default, and I believe that one or two additional options have been added here. It's now possible to have different configurations for different connections. So, for example, you may wish to share certain applications on your Bluetooth network, but not on the internet. And likewise, you may want to share files and printer services within your local area network, but again, not to the internet. So the Windows Firewall is quite a bit more sophisticated now. So let's go and look at some of those options. So the first tab is
General, one of three tab control.
General, and we've got a radio button here, I believe.
Unrecommended or radio button. Checked.
And there, obviously, you can toggle it on and off.
Don't allow exceptions. D checkbox unchecked.
Don't allow exceptions. Of course, you can instruct the firewall to permit certain programs to receive connections from the internet. For example, things like remote assistance. You may use that, and you may find that you want to allow connections from the internet to the remote assistance utility. So there are some exceptions set up here by default, and we can see what those are in a moment.
What else should I know about Windows Firewall? Link.
And there's another of these links that we're starting to see appear now in dialogues and property sheets within Windows, and obviously you can learn more there about the Windows Firewall. So let's move on to the next tab with Control Tab.
Programs and Services P. File and Printer Sharing. 1 of 10 List View.
Now these are the exceptions, or these are at least the programs for which I have rules set up. And the top one there, as you can hear,
File and Printer Sharing 1 of 10.
File and Printer Sharing. So let's go and look at the properties for that.
Add Program. Add
There's an Edit
E-dial
button there, that'll do
you
the
job.
You
can modify port openings to best fit your security needs. TCP 139 Scope Subnet 1 of 4 List View. Dialog Edit a Service.
Okay, so now we're told, and this does get a bit technical.
TCP 139, scope subnet 1 of 4.
We're now told which ports this service uses. In order for computers to share information, they need to transfer data using one or more ports and using one or more protocols. The protocol, I guess you can think of as being almost like the language in which the computers talk to each other, and the port you could imagine as being the equivalent to a physical port almost on your computer, but these are imaginary computer type ports. And so if I go to the top option here.
TCP 139 scope subnet 104.
Okay, we can hear TCP, that's the protocol, and that the file and printer sharing uses port 139. So let's press tab here.
Change scope, see dialog, button.
And we have a change scope button. And if we go in here with space.
My network subnet only M radio button check 2 of 3. Dialog change scope to define the set computers for which this port is open. Click an option below. If you select custom list, you can type a comma delimited list of IP addresses and or subnets. Any computer including those on the internet radio button unchecked my network subnet only radio button check custom list radio button unchecked example 198.162.114.20.
Okay, you heard quite a lot of information there. There are essentially three options here. The top one of which is...
Any computer including those on the internet,
Any computer including those on the internet, so do I want to share my files and printers with the internet? Well, actually, no, I don't. So I'm going to go down...
My network subnet only M radio button check 2 of 3.
My network, or subnet, that's the second option, and of course the third...
Custom list C, radio button. Check 3 of 3.
I can create a custom list. So, really, this firewall now much more sophisticated than the internet connection firewall that was in Windows XP Service Pack 1.
OK button.
So, I'm going to come out of there.
Change scope. See. Dialog.
I have everything set up as I like it. So, let's just move on now.
Display a notification when Windows Firewall blocks a program and checkbox. Checked.
Well, that's fairly self-explanatory. If Windows Firewall blocks a program, you can receive a notification.
What are the risks of allowing exceptions? Link.
And then, of course, more help information.
OK button.
And I think that's the end of that tab. So let's move on to the final tab.
Advanced 3. A 3 tab control.
And on here we have...
Windows Firewall is enabled for the connection selected below. To change settings for an individual connection, select it, and then click Settings. Bluetooth Network 1 of 3 list view.
So these were the options I was referring to a little bit earlier, that it's possible to set up the firewall on a connection-by-connection basis. If you're using Windows XP Professional, then really you need these options for your network and for your internet connectivity. You need to be able to separate those, because obviously you want some things available to the network and other things available to the internet. And really, some of the detail is beyond the scope of this general look at Windows XP Service Pack 2, but as you can see, there is quite a lot of power available to you there. Now, if you're a power user, you may find yourself changing those firewall settings on a fairly regular basis. And there is a quick and easy way to get to the firewall. If you go to the control panel,
which control panel?
There
control
we go. Panel. And go Except to network connections.
Folder options.
Where
Display
is it?
Folder options. Fonts. 10. Network connections.
There it is.
Network connections. 16.
And to go in...
Network
there, and go to local area connection.
Local area connection.
And bring up the properties for that with Alt and Enter.
Configure. See dialog button. Install and dialog button.
There's a checkbox in here.
Uninstall U button. Properties are show icon in notification area when connected. W checkbox checked.
Show icon in notification area when connected. So this will place an icon in the notification area of the system tray. To tell you when you're connected to your network, and then what that allows you to do is go to the system tray. So let's do that now. Windows key and tab to get to the taskbar.
Taskbar.
And then tab.
Windows Explorer button. Size tray. Skype online button.
Tray.
Skype online.
And let's go to the local area connection.
Local area connection speed 100.0 Mbps button. Local area.
So I'm going to right click that.
Pointer routed to right. Graphic. Context menu. Connections tray. Local area connection speed 100 points. Open network connections. Change Windows Firewall settings.
There you go. You can hear in the context menu from that you can jump straight to the Windows Firewall settings, and that's new in Windows XP Service Pack 2. One of the big new features in the new Windows Service Pack is the ability within Internet Explorer 6 to block those pesky pop-ups. And I should say at this point that not all pop-ups are undesirable. Some pop-ups can be extremely useful, and sites that use them responsible, it is possible for you to set up exceptions for those sites. But there are sites, and we all know who they are, that use pop-ups irresponsibly. And it's quite often a nightmare to find the original browser window when bombarded with pop-ups and you're alt-tabbing around. And those sites that open pop-ups, when you close the page, when you press Alt+F4 from within Internet Explorer and then it opens another window, how annoying is that? So many people will be welcoming the pop-up blocker in the new Windows XP, and it is dormant until you encounter your first pop-up. And when you do run across a pop-up, then a message pops up asking you if you would like to enable the pop-up blocker and whether or not you would like to block pop-ups from this particular website. So there are a couple of ways to get to the pop-up blocker. You can either go to Internet Options from the Windows Control Panel, or you can select it from the Tools menu from within Internet Explorer itself. I happen to think that the second way is slightly easier, and I have one of these fancy schmancy multimedia keyboards with a button for Internet Explorer, which I'm going to press now.
http://news.google.co.uk/microsoft-internet-explorer.
And there goes my homepage, which is the Google News for the UK. And I'm going to go to the Tools menu here, Alt-T.
Alt-F. Tools Alt-T. Tools Alt-T. Pop-up blocker, people down.
So there you can hear it's fairly high on the menu. So let's go into the submenu.
Turn off pop-up blocker B.
Turn off pop-up blocker.
Pop-up blocker settings, P dialog.
So those are the two options available to you. So let's go into
pop-up blocker settings. Edit box address of website to allow W. Dialog. Pop-up blocker settings exceptions group box pop-ups are currently blocked. You can allow pop-ups from specific websites by adding the site to the list below. Address of website to allow W default add a button disabled allowed sites s.telkincommunities.
Right, okay, so we've already got some sites here already, and it's just a simple matter to type in an address. I could just sit here and I could type in http://www.guardian.co.uk and then go add and
edit box address of website to allow W.
And it's done. It's as simple as that. And now the Guardian, I have set up as an exception, so I'm now allowing pop-ups from that particular website, and pop-ups from anywhere else apart from my exceptions will be blocked. A pop-up is a new browser window that hasn't been invoked directly by you, the user. So those of you that use the BBC radio player, although why you would want to listen to another radio station is beyond me, but those of you who listen to the BBC radio player will know that when you press enter on radio player on the BBC site, that the player actually opens in a separate browser window. Let's move on here.
Remove R button.
Remove.
Remove all E button.
And we can remove all.
Settings play a sound when a pop-up is blocked. P checkbox checked.
Play a sound when pop-up is blocked, and inevitably the sound is or something along those lines.
Settings block pop-ups open from links I click. B checkbox unchecked.
Now this is the checkbox that lets you deal with this issue that I was just talking about. Block pop-ups from links I click. So if you want to use something like the BBC Radio Player where it does launch in a new browser window, then you would check this.
Checked.
To prevent that from happening. But it's the spammers that we really can't be dealing with, so
unchecked.
I'm going to leave that one unchecked.
Settings show information bar when a pop-up is blocked. I checkbox unchecked.
You can have an information bar coming up telling you that a pop-up is blocked. Personally, I'm quite happy with the little sound.
Close C button. Edit box address of website to allow W. Allowed sites S. Telkin community.
There we go. This is what I was looking for. The list of allowed sites, and the top one there.
Telkin communities.com 1 of 5.
I've got 5 sites so far here that I'm allowing pop-ups from.
Pop-up blocker.
And you'll see that the Guardian
www.guardian.co.uk/4/5.
So it is really very simple to set up exceptions or to disable the pop-up blocker entirely. The other exciting development in Internet Explorer in Windows XP Service Pack 2 is the ability to manage Internet Explorer add-ons. Increasingly, websites now are asking you to install plugins and additional programs in order to make the most of their functionality. And we do this also with ACB Radio. If you go to the ourplace.acbradio.org chat room portal, then in order to use that service, you need to download and install the Talking Communities iVocalize component. Now, as you visit various sites and take various components, it's very easy to lose track. So there is a lot more functionality in Internet Explorer for managing Internet Explorer add-ons in Service Pack 2. So let's look at some of that now. I'm going to go back to my homepage.
Google.uk Microsoft Internet Explorer. Top.
Okay, and bring up the Internet options. So Alt-T for the tools
file left,
menu.
Up,
and then
Internet options.
Internet options, just pressed arrow up there. And then I'm
going to
press Enter. And I'm on the
general, one of 7 tab.
General, and there are 7 tabs here. And so if I go to programs,
security, privacy, content, connections, program 6 of 7.
I've just right arrowed across the tab control, and I'm going to press tab.
HTML editor H, notepad 2 of 2 combo box.
Now these options are already in the existing Windows XP release. You can tell Windows Explorer which should be the default HTML editor.
Email E. Microsoft Outlook,
which should be the default email program.
Newsgroup 10,
which should be the program for reading newsgroups.
Internet Call T, NetMeeting 1,
which program should be used for making an internet call.
Calendar C, Microsoft Outlook,
and the calendar
contact.
And contacts.
Reset web settings, R dialog.
And there is a reset button.
Manage
there.
Add-ons, M dialog.
And this is what we're looking for. Manage add-ons. This is new, and if I press space and go in here.
Show O. Add-ons that have been used by Internet Explorer 1 of 2 combo box.
Okay, there is a combo box there, and as you can hear, we've got a choice. We can either look at
add-ons that have been used by Internet Explorer 1 of 2,
or
add-ons currently loaded in Internet Explorer 2 of 2.
So let's have a look at add-ons that are being used by Internet Explorer.
Add-ons that have been used by Internet Explorer.
Or that have been used by Internet Explorer. So press tab here now, and I should come into a list of the add-ons that I've installed over the last little while.
Show O, Windows Media Player, Publisher Microsoft Corporation Status Enabled Type Active X Control Last Accessed 15.04.20.04.19.18 Used 1 Block 01 of 18 No Selected Item List.
Okay, well, there's 18 items here. The first one is a Windows Media Player ActiveX Control. So that's one of these things that allow you to play Windows Media content from within a web page. And I'm going to arrow down. Some of these are already installed by default when you get the Service Pack 2.
iVocalize Internet Conference 3 Setup.
There's the one I was talking about. iVocalize, which is for internet conferencing, and that's the technology used to power the OurPlace facility at ACB Radio. So I've selected it now from the list.
Settings enable eRadio button check 1 of 2.
It's obviously enabled.
Update ActiveX U button.
And then we've got an update button. So for each of these components, we can remove it, disable it, search for updates, and it really now gives you the chance to manage your Internet Explorer add-ons in a way that just really hasn't been possible in the past. And quite often when the Internet Explorer add-ons have gotten messed up, the only way to resolve that situation was to reinstall the browser. So hopefully there'll be much less of that in the future. Just a couple of small things to finish off with here. From the control panel.
Control panel. Accessibility options. 1 of 32 no selected item list.
If we go to add remove programs.
Add hardware. Add or remove program. Add or Add or remove program.
There's been a little feature added here. Let's just get to it.
Sort by. Show updates checkbox. Checked.
There it is. There is a new checkbox in the Add or Remove Programs Manager for showing or hiding updates. So, quite often now, when we install an application, a couple of months down the line, the software company release an update for it, and it can make navigating the Add or Remove Programs list a little bit cumbersome when you have to wade through half a dozen updates for each program. So the Windows XP Service Pack 2 allows manufacturers to have the updates automatically hidden, so you just see their application appear once, and of course that's optional. So if you'd prefer to see all the updates, then of course you can have that checkbox unchecked.
Show updates checkbox unchecked.
If a software developer doesn't change their program to take advantage of this new filtering feature for hiding updates, then it will behave as it did in Service Pack 1. So really, in terms of what I can actually demonstrate for you in the release candidate that's available at time of recording, that really is about it, although I should say we haven't covered absolutely everything, and this glance at Windows XP Service Pack 2 is not comprehensive by any stretch of the imagination. Also, I would urge you to remember that this is a pre-release which has been offered up to the public for testing purposes, and many of the features may change slightly compared with the final release of Windows XP Service Pack 2, which we're expecting later this summer. I understand that there may be a release candidate 2, which is anticipated sometime around the end of May or during June. Additional functionality in Windows XP Service Pack 2 we haven't looked at includes improved memory security and execution protection with compatible hardware. There are improvements to the way in which email attachments are handled within Outlook Express. In addition, there is more support for Bluetooth, and there will probably be more changes in the final release. So to my verdict. On balance, this pre-release seems stable and responsive. The new security features are very welcome indeed. As mentioned earlier, it's worth noting that Microsoft has said that they have no intention of backporting these security enhancements to earlier versions of Windows, including Windows 2000 and Windows 9X. GW Micro are already advertising the fact that WindowEyes 4.5 SP3 has been tried and tested with Windows XP Service Pack 2, and it seems very likely that the other screen reader manufacturers will follow. I'm quite happy with it, and as mentioned earlier, if you'd like to give it a try, you can do so by visiting Microsoft's TechNet website at allthews.microsoft.com/TechNet, T-E-C-H-N-E-T. Click the download link from that page, and from there you can download the release candidate 1. And finally, I can't repeat this point enough, if you do decide to try this pre-release, you are doing so at your own risk, and ACB Radio strongly urges you not to install it on a machine that you don't have fully backed up. If you'd like to contact me, you can do so by writing to support@acbradio.org. That's support@acbradio.org. I can be called toll-free from the United States on 1-888-625-8684. That's 1-888-625-8684. For Main Menu, I'm Dave Williams. On behalf of all the Main Menu team, very many thanks for listening. Oh, and don't forget, if you'd like to be on the programme, drop us a line, mainmenu@acbradio.org. Until next time, bye for now.